Hello and welcome to Master of Disaster. Before I get started, I need to tell you about Anchor. I have been wanting to do a podcast for a long time, but I just didn't think I had what it took to do it. I don't have the best computer skills. I didn't know what I needed, but then I stumbled across Anchor. And if you haven't heard of Anchor, you need to check them out now. It's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain how. First of all, it's free. They have all sorts of creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. So if you're thinking you need all sorts of expensive equipment, you need editing tools, all sorts of software, you don't. You literally just need your phone or a computer. It's that easy. Not only is it easy, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many, many more. Another bonus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's great. It's a big bonus. I didn't even know about that. I just wanted to get my word out there. So, it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So if you were thinking of doing a podcast, but afraid that you couldn't, don't be afraid. Go to your app store and get the Anchor app, or if you're on your computer, go to anchor.fm to get started today. Again, Anchor, ANCHOR.FM, and get started today.
Hello, and welcome to Master of Disaster. I'm your host, Mark Bukowski. I am doing podcast number one of what I hope to be many. I have a goal for this podcast, and this goal is to help people who suffer from drug abuse, child molestation, physical abuse, mental abuse. Maybe they've been a bully. Anything that I can do to help people with negative thoughts and energy. And what I mean by not negative thoughts are, those intrusive thoughts that you just can't deal with. So I thought I'd start today's podcast just by generalizing who I am and where I'm from and what I'm about. I can start by saying I really don't know much about computers. I really don't know how to do a podcast or where I'm going. So to start, I want to give a huge shout out to Anchor. Anchor is a company that allowed me to do a podcast. This is how little I know. I can hardly explain Anchor, but I can tell you they are the greatest and easiest company or podcasting platform that will walk you through step by step what you need to do to make a podcast. For a majority of my life, I lived in fear that we will get into as, time goes on. But I learned to overcome these fears and the things that I've gone through in life, my disasters, such as the name Master of Disaster. And I've always wanted to write a book, but I don't have any PhD or any significant letters after my name. I graduated high school, and I got my associate's degree in construction management. But I own my own plumbing, heating, and air conditioning company in upstate New York. So let's just say I don't have what it takes to write a book, but I've always dreamed of writing a book to tell my story straight from my heart, the way I see it. And I think that many, many people, if they catch on to what I am saying, will benefit from the things that I overcame and that I went through in my life. They were horrific. I didn't know they were horrific, and it caused a lot of problems with me. I didn't know that was what was causing problems, But I figured it out, and I found a way to live in peace. I've found a way to accept that there's a higher power, and he is willing to help you. You just have to ask. Your higher power doesn't have to be God. I'm not here to preach the Bible. I'm not here to preach any religion. I'm just here basically to help people. And by helping people, it helps me. This is my way of going to therapy. You know, I don't go to therapy anymore, but I've since helped about 6 people that were serious heroin addicts that had some pretty troubling issues in their life overcome these problems. And the last person I helped get off from heroin has been clean 6 years now. So I'm at a point in my life where I really want to get back into helping people. And again, writing a book was just something I wasn't capable of. So I thought about doing a podcast. Again, super intimidated. I didn't know what I was going to do, how to do it, how these people do it. I know I spend a ton of time listening to Joe Rogan, who I think is amazing. But I am far from a Joe Rogan. I am far from anyone, and that's fine, because I just want to be me. And the person that I am is someone that loves to make a change in someone's life for the better. So let me get back to Anchor real quick. So not knowing anything, I found Anchor. And I signed on with Anchor, and they walked me through step by step how to set up. Literally had to know nothing. Just had to be able to read a few sentences and talk. And talking is the hardest part, but I read step-by-step directions, and they walked me through designing. I got to literally just choose a background, choose my title. Title could be whatever I want, pick a font. They'd lay it out. It's just that simple. Within finding Anchor start to finish, I was maybe 30 minutes set up and ready to do a podcast. I invested about, you know, $250 in a decent microphone, a decent set of headsets, and here I am today. This is about a month after I bought everything and set Anchor up, because I have not been able to figure out how to start this thing or how to approach it. So I've been talking to my brother-in-law, who is a 27-year retired football coach from the University of Villanova. He's been to a few other colleges, but majority of his life a defensive coordinator, and very faithful, and really trusts in a higher power. So he's given me a ton of advice, and I really wanted to get this going. So this morning I called him and I said, hey, I think I'm going to start this today. Any ideas how I can start it? And basically, to sum it up, he just said, just be you. You have a great story to tell, and just tell it. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to kind of do this raw, uncut, and just if I stumble in my words, if I say the wrong words, if I sound like a heating contractor redneck from upstate New York, that's what it is. What you hear is what it is. But I think some people can gain some confidence, and they can find that there is ways to live in this world, as hard and as impossible as it may seem today, and feel okay. You know, as I said today, I'm just giving you a broad idea of what I'm about and what this is about, and then hopefully, you know, I get some listeners that stay tuned weekly and learn, and we all learn together. And you know, if there was a few people that learn from me, and a few of those people, you know, teach a few other people and learn from them, and we start this, you know, domino effect, it's not going to change the world, but it's going to help a smidget. And there's nothing that we need more in our world than a little bit of advice and a little bit of help and a little bit of love from other people, regardless of who they are, what they are, what they've come from, what they look like. It just doesn't matter. Inside, we're all one thing. We're all the same people. We have, you know, the same thing inside: a heart, lungs, bones, muscles. And from our shoulders up is where we're all different. We all have a brain, but they all think in a lot of different ways. So again, thank you, Anchor, for making this possible. Anyone that has debated doing a podcast, don't debate. Look at Anchor, realize how easy it is, and, you know, get started. If I can do it, I'm promising you, if I can do this right now, there's nobody in this world that isn't capable of it, because I love to speak, I love to help people, but to do it in this little sound room that I built, speaking into a microphone with no audience, although I have, you know, some sound effects that I can play some audiences, you know, a little bit of scratching, a little bit of, too bad for me, and, you know, there's my audience. So, let's do this. So again, my name is Mark Bukowski. I live in upstate New York, and I am 48 years old. I was raised by a single mother who herself had gone through what I would consider one of the hardest lives a woman can go through. Now, I am not putting a cap on the hardest life. There's people that have suffered way worse than me, way worse than my mother, way worse than my sister, and way worse than, you know, a lot of people. I'm just talking about how bad my life was through my eyes and what became of me and how I overcame it. So I don't want people out there that say, oh, this guy, he didn't go through anything. You know, I know there's a lot of people that have gone through and are going through terrible, I mean terrible things. I can't explain to you how, you know, evil people can be, the evil that's in this world. So by no means am I saying I have gone through the worst and nobody has gone through more. So I want to get that out of the way. I want to make that clear. I have gone through some things, but in the end, no matter what we've all gone through, we all come out with the same feelings, the same fears, the same thoughts, the same, we're helpless. Whether we're war veterans, thank you to all the people that have served and protected our country. I wouldn't be able to do this without you people, so I am taking nothing away from you. But I am a person who suffers from PTSD. I'll get into that in more depth later. So it's not just a symptom or disease or whatever you want to call it that only, you know, war veterans, people of war who have witnessed, I can't even imagine what they've witnessed. It's not a disease that is just for them. And there's people out there that have gone through hell, witnessed ferocious things, and they go on with life just fine. And that's where we all differ. So God bless those people. And if they can do that, that's unbelievable. And I hope they can help other people, you know, give their solutions and or how they do it. But there's a massive amount of people in this world that are like me, that suffer from symptoms of anxiety, panic attacks, tremendous fear, and, you know, the worst possible thing that I considered the worst thing was irrational thoughts. You know, they all group together. You know, the fear starts, and then you start to fear the fear, and then your adrenaline starts pumping, your heart starts racing, that gut starts to tremble, whatever you want to call it. And you start to sweat. You feel like you're going to poop your pants. It's full-blown just panic. And these intrusive thoughts, they just start taking over. And what do you do? Why are we thinking these things? And, you know, for the first 30 years of my life, I didn't know. I just thought I was a crazy fucker. And I kept it secret. I did a lot of things to hide it. So, you know, excuse me, I'm going to take a quick drink. But I found the way. So back to who I am again. My name is Mark. Raised by a single mother who went through hell. Her father, so my grandfather, so he was what I would consider extremely evil. And you will learn more about him as these podcasts go on. But my mother, I can't tell you enough how much she loved my sister and I. That's just my sister and I. And she did everything she could to keep a roof over our head, you know, and did everything that she just knew how. She didn't know any more than what she did. And it took years of questioning why, you know. But again, as we go and learn from each other, I can teach you that, you know, questioning why and living in the past just brings up emotions that you don't need to bring up. You need to learn to accept, forgive, and love, or accept and maybe not forgive, but forget, and move on and live in the now. And that's very important that we learn to live in the now, because there's nothing that is in my past that is going to affect me right now. Right now, as I speak to you, that's all I have to worry about right now. I don't have to worry about what happens when I get done talking to you or where I go next. You know, I just have to live in the present. And presently, right now, I am a good human. I have a lot to share. I love to help people. And that's where we're at. So I was born and my father was just coming out of Vietnam. I didn't have a relationship with my father. I didn't know him. Again, I was born in 1972, and my mother finally left that abusive marriage. I think I was less than a year old, maybe 8 months, and she finally got away from him. He was a severe alcoholic, physically abusive, and on several occasions, you know, beat her terribly, and on two occasions almost killed her. And she's told me stories on one occasion where, you know, he came home, threw her down, got on top of her, and pinned his two thumbs into her trachea as hard as he could, to the point that she thought that was it. She was going to die. My sister was older than me, 3 years older, so she was on his back yelling, screaming, and I was in a crib. So I have no recollection of it, but I have vivid pictures that I imagine in my mind. So that was the final straw. My mother, luckily, she came from a tough growing up. And she had two brothers and a father that were always against her. And a mother that didn't have a choice but to take the side of her husband. So she was very tough, and she still is the toughest person I know. She just beat ovarian cancer. I don't think people gave her much of a chance, including doctors. And she just simply said, I am not going anywhere. You know, she's 71 years old, and, you know, I love her. So anything that I talk about, you know, don't take anything away from her. She's very strong. She's great. And I love her, and I don't hold her accountable for anything. So my grandfather was evil. She was born and raised by a guy that enjoyed hurting people. So a few things about him. So my maternal grandparents. In this story, you know, and I might be jumping in circles, but just stick with me. Things will get smoother as I go along. But I will speak about everybody in my family, but just use them as mother. Father, I am going to call father. That would be my stepfather. And I'm going to call the person that donated his sperm to put me on this beautiful earth my biological father. So I have mother, father, biological father, maternal grandmother, grandfather, paternal grandmother, grandfather. Okay? And then, you know, if it comes up, there would be my step grandma and grandpa. So I was a young boy living in a trailer that was so run down that you couldn't even imagine people living it. It was actually two trailers. And if you can picture a trailer, a single wide old trailer from the, I'm imagining back then, this was in the 70s, early 70s, this was probably from the 40s or whenever trailers started, manufacturing homes. But it was two trailers, and they, trailers have a front door and a back door. So the front door's on one side of the trailer, the back door's down the hallway and on the back side of the trailer. So we had a trailer that the front faced the road and the back faced the driveway. And then the back door had another trailer that butted its back door against our trailer. So if you can think of it as two long rectangles that you overlap by about 10 feet and put the two doors together. So that was our house. And then between those two doors was a piece of plywood that went on the floor and a piece of plywood that went over the top and the sides. But they weren't airtight. They were just plywood. And if it snowed, you know, it snowed into that hallway and my mother would have to actually shovel the snow. So, you know, you walk. I remember this. This is where we start when I was young. I remember walking into this trailer, and, you know, what walked to me was an awesome place. To the right was a living room. To the entrance, I believe, was a kitchen. To the left was a hallway. You go down the hallway, and the right was my bedroom. The next door on the right was a bathroom. Across from the bathroom was the two adjoining doors that went into the other trailer. That door went into my sister's bedroom, and then there was a wall that was built, and the rest of the trailer was gutted, and that was where my uncle had a typewriter repair shop. So a lot of chemicals or just lubricating WD-40 type smells bring back like a lot of memories of living in that trailer, because I remember, you know, he cleaned and repaired typewriters. And that's all my sister's bedroom smelled like. So you go beyond my sister's door in the bathroom, and that was the master's bathroom. That was, or bedroom, I'm sorry, that was my mom's bedroom. So this is where my mother left her house as soon as she possibly could. Her house being about 600 feet down the road. This was owned by her parents. Her parents owned a whole bunch of trailers that they rented out, and they rented this to her because she was paying rent, room and board, in the house that she lived as a young girl. I don't know the exact age, but I think at the age of 14, she had to pay room and board or she would be kicked out of the house. And trust me, when I say kicked out of the house, there's no doubt my grandfather would pick her up and literally throw her out, and it didn't matter if it was 10 below zero out. It doesn't matter. He wouldn't care. She would have been gone. So, my maternal grandfather. Evil, like I said, start with my mother. My mother was raised by my grandmother and my grandfather, and in my eyes, my grandmother was the sweetest woman who also probably went through hell her entire marriage, although she stuck with him till the day he died. I don't know a lot about their relationship, but I do know what I saw when I spent the majority of my childhood in their house. My grandfather really didn't touch her brothers. He took it all out of my mother. My mother was beaten. My mother was sexually abused by him. And when I say beaten, he did things that today would be... I shouldn't even say today. Then and now or any time in history would be considered evil. He hurt her. He did things to her that, you know, are terrible. I don't know half of the stories, but what I do know are horrific. My grandmother cooked on a wood stove. So this was an old stove that you fed with wood, and it had burners on top for cooking, and it had an oven, and that's how she cooked everything. She was the best baker in the world. I don't know how she controlled the temperature, but she could. And above that stove is a big hook where you would hang meat. And that's right in the middle of the kitchen where you walk in the front door where everybody can see you. So if you can just, to give you one example, my mother, if she wet the bed when she was little, she had a belt strapped around her waist in the nude, and she was hung from that hook. So that just gives you a little bit of an idea of what this guy's like. So enough of him for now. Back to where we were. So I was 8 months old. My mother finally left an abusive relationship, but she didn't really have anywhere to turn. So she worked and raised us as a single mother, uneducated, high school degree, but worked in a factory, and did what she was capable of doing. I was about 4 years old when the person that I call Dad came into our lives and would change our way of living forever. And I don't even know if I've ever actually told him, but I can't imagine where I would be, or if I'd even be alive, if this person didn't step into our lives. So my father comes into our lives at 4 years old, and my mother and my father hit it off. Now, this is not my biological father. This is my father. I call him Dad. I love him. He was the best man in my wedding. He is the best person I've ever met in my life, and God help me, when he passes, it will be a brutal day for me. So he steps into our lives, things go great, they go on a few dates, you know, and the next thing I know, we're moving into his house that he had built with his own bare hands, and also in that house was his father. His mother and father had divorced later in life, and they built the house, and his father moved in with him. His father was also a severe alcoholic. So we moved in, and I did not accept it. I guess I would not go near him. I don't remember this, but my mother said I resisted him in every way I could. Eventually, they were married a few years later in our backyard, and, you know, his father was still living with us, but being brought home every night, lights out, drunk by the police. So my mother, having gone through so much, finally said, you know, that's enough. It's either us or him. So God bless my father. He found an apartment for his father and put him up in the perfect location, in an apartment above the hotel that he spent every night getting drunk. So my father put him in a place that he knew he was safe. He could do what he wanted. And, you know, life went on. So, here's where my story goes. We, my sister and I, at 4 and 6 years old, lived in a house in upstate New York with a new father figure that I guess I didn't accept. I had one male figure in my life when I was, you know, I guess age 0 to 4, and that was my great-grandfather, who was the sweetest man in the world. And what I remember of him was spending a lot of time with him, and the only memories I have are sitting on his lap having pumpkin pie. So he was a one-armed man who was a farmer his whole life and had his arm torn off in the PTO shaft when unloading corn silage. His arm got caught, and it just ripped it and shredded his arm right off at the shoulder. So I just remember sitting against his shoulder, which was just a nub, with his arm wrapped around me, and we would always eat pumpkin pie together. That's all I remember, but they were the best memories, you know, I have of my childhood. So, again, I'm probably going in circles, but there's things I remember that are important. I remember coming home to that trailer. I don't know who brought us home. It was a babysitter, and I saw my mother crying, and I didn't know. Oh, I'm sorry. I woke up in the morning. It was a Saturday because my sister and I, our favorite thing was to get up Saturday morning, pull out that old garage sale couch with the pull-out, you know, bed, put that back up with the springs, get a blanket, and sit there and watch our Saturday morning cartoons. It was the best. Yeah, we loved it. But I came out, my mom was crying on the couch that we were going to pull out. And I was old enough at this point, 4 years old, I think, and I asked, "What's the matter?" And she said, "Come here." So I remember vividly going over to her and saying, "What's wrong?" And she said, "Grandpa died." Now, I called my great-grandpa Grandpa. And I vividly remember just running to my room hysterically crying. I didn't know how to handle it, what she had just told me, or what I was going to do. And then I remember my sister coming to my room and saying, "Why are you crying?" And my mother said, you know, "Leave him alone, he's upset." So I don't even remember the funeral. I don't think I even went to the funeral, if there was a funeral. But it wasn't long after that we moved in with my father. And I, at that age, had these terrible, terrible thoughts and feelings. And I'm going back to like 4 or 5 years old where I had feelings and thoughts that I needed to die to be with my grandfather. And I was scared. These thoughts scared me. So I told my mom about them, and my mom said, you know, really, you know, that was just surprising to her. So she immediately got me into a psychologist. And as a kid, I remember going to a psychologist. I don't remember anything about the psychologist other than playing chutes and ladders. So, you know, I stopped seeing the psychologist who knows when. But that's where it began. At that age, for the rest of my life, until I was 30 years old, I lived in fear, and it got worse as I got older because I spent with my sister pretty much every school vacation and a lot of weekends at my grandparents, where my grandfather was very abusive. He would take me to work, and he would sometimes burn me with pipes. He would electrocute me. He always was very aggressive and mean. He was extremely mean to my grandmother. Anything that bothered my grandmother, he would do it, you know, twice as hard. He would drive too fast, and she would say, "Can you please slow down? The kids are in the back." That would be my sister and I. And he'd say, "Slow down." So he would deliberately go as fast as he could. In this old, you know, 19, original Volkswagen, I don't even know what. But it had a stick shift, and there was a flat bench seat in the back, and my sister and I would look at each other and just cry because he would drive like a maniac. So that's what he did. He just liked to torment. And later on in life, I would find out that not only was he abusive to me and my sister mentally and physically, and I mean by hitting us or whipping us, but he also was sexually abusive, which I found out. One night, we were there, and I was sitting at an old antique baking station. I don't even know what it's called. I can't remember, but it had like this accordion thing that folded up, and there was a flour and sugar station in there, and we were sitting there drawing. And my grandfather was an electrician, self-employed, who was a very hard worker and could fix anything or build anything, was coming home for dinner. So they called lunch dinner. Dinner, what we think of, they called supper and breakfast. And he had to have 3 meals a day, and every meal had to include potatoes. So we knew basically when he was gone, when he was coming home. And it was almost lunchtime, and we saw him pull in across the street. His garage door started going up, and that's when my sister and I definitely started, always just immediately knew, oh, shit, we have to behave now. Not that we weren't misbehaving, but we literally had to keep our mouths shut. And this is where it got difficult for me. He walked over, and my sister was just starting puberty. So I'm jumped ahead a few years here. But he comes over, and she stares straight ahead, and I stare straight at my coloring book in fear. And he says, "What's going on over here?" As he reaches down through the neck of her shirt and grabs a hold of her boobs that had just started to develop. And I'm surprised I'm talking about this without crying, because I usually do, but I can see out of the corner of my eye she is tearing up, and I'm staring straight at my coloring book. And then I heard him say, "Well, get cleaned up. It's time for dinner." So she immediately goes upstairs, and I follow her, and she's on a bed in a bedroom that we slept in, right off from the bedroom of my grandfather's room, connected by a closet. There was two twin beds in there. And she's crying. And she's crying. And I'm asking her, what's wrong with you? And she said, "You know." And I said, "We have to tell Grandma." And she said, no, you know. We refused, because my grandfather was violent. And he was a big guy. I'm guessing he was 6'1", 6'2", maybe 240, 250. He had hands like a friggin' catcher's mitt. Worked his whole life very hard. So if I was writing a book, I could go on and on and on about who and where and what. And I feel like I'm jumping in circles, but I just want to get my point across. This guy was very evil. We had a little Char was her name. She looked like charcoal. Poodle that we had growing up. And when we spent time at my grandparents, because my parents were young and they liked to go out and have fun. So, you know, we spent weekends and we spent any holiday we had there, because they had to work. And then the weekends that they wanted to go out and have fun, we stayed there the weekends. And, you know, he used to make me sit on his lap when he got home at night and then ask me to bring my dog with me, which was a little gray poodle. So I'd sit on his lap and put Char on my lap. So there was me on his lap, him in his chair, dog on my lap. And he used to always reach around, both of us, because he was a giant man, almost like he was going to bear hug both of us. But he'd let the dog lick his right hand, and as soon as my dog's tongue came out, he'd grab her jaws and he would squeeze them and make her bite her tongue as hard as he could. But he would hold that dog with everything he had so that dog could not get out of his hands and just sit there and yipe with a closed mouth and a tongue half bitten off like it was in a vise. And then he'd let her go and she'd run and he would laugh. And I would sit there, you know, in tears crying, but not be able to do anything. So, all this was going on, and we were not going to say a word to anybody. We just went along with it. You know, we'd get dropped off there all the time, and my sister and I would literally, they had a horseshoe driveway. My sister and I would literally chase my parents around the driveway saying, "Don't leave us here, don't leave us here, don't let us go, let us go with you." And off they'd go down the road, and taillights would disappear about a half a mile down the road as they went around the corner. So that was kind of how we were raised. So I wanted to let you know, it wasn't pleasant. And my mother really couldn't deal with much. Like I said, she did the best she can. But when it came to me having problems emotionally later in life, I'm talking after the psychology of my great-grandfather dying, I went through things, and I approached to my mother several times, and we'll get into that later, where she just didn't have the patience to listen, and she told me to basically take a hike. So, problems not solved that were buried and, you know, always haunted me the rest of my life. So that's where I'm going with this. So, from as far back as I can remember to about 30 years old, I lived in fear, and it would be so bad that I didn't know what in the hell was wrong with me. I thought for sure I was crazy, but I was not going to tell anybody. So I was very good at hiding it. I tried to, you know, read things and find out what it was. But the second that I would read something about anything like a sociopath or schizophrenic, my fear would double. And I would shut anything or anything I was watching and it would be off. So I started to learn as I grew that things that made me scared were violence. Anything on TV, if I saw anything on the news that was violent or negative, instant panic. If I went on a trip and we went by a car accident, instant panic. If I saw someone in a fight, instant panic. And this panic would, you know, manifest into something bigger and bigger every time, and it would last longer and longer. But every time I would just deal with it. I would sweat bullets, hide in my room. I would do anything I could to try to ignore it, but it's impossible. Those intrusive thoughts just take over. And it would go on for sometimes 2 days, 3 days, sometimes a week, sometimes a month. But eventually they would always, always subside. So, you know, it got to the point where every time that I would have these feelings or thoughts, or I would say episodes, I would tell myself, this is the last one. And when it would go away, I'd say, oh, thank God, it's gone. Oh, whew, I feel better again. I could even think of things. I'd be like, oh, I feel great. And then, boom, just like that, there they were again. And sometimes I didn't even know why, because I didn't go by an accident. I didn't see this. I didn't do this. I couldn't figure out why. And it was terrible. And it was so long that I dealt with it. I remember being 10 and saying, okay, this can't last longer than 3 years, because when I'm 13, I'm a teenager, and teenagers don't think like this. 3 years later, still had them. And I specifically remember saying this. When I was 13, I said, all right, when I'm 16, I'll give it 3 more years. I won't have this anymore. Because when I'm 16, I have a driver's license, and I'll be more, you know, closer to being an adult. And they don't think like this. 16 years old, you know, multiply it by 3. It was that much worse. So fast forward, I said, well, all right, I'll wait till I'm 18. 18 years old, you know, you can do a lot at 18. There's a lot of things you can't do at 16 and 17, but you can at 18. So at 18, they'll be gone. So 18 comes, and you get the story. This went on and on. And every time it seemed a little worse. And I'm just going to, you know, try to shorten this up, because I am going on a little too long. Like I said, I didn't know how to go about this. But fast forward to 30, and I have my first son. And I can't tell you the feelings and emotions that I felt when he was born. And these were good. I mean, these were amazing. I could not believe that I just gave birth to a boy. And it took a lot for me to have my wife talk her into having kids, because I was scared. But everything was hunky-dory in the hospital. I wasn't scared. I thought, you know, this is it. Maybe this is what I needed. Until the day we went home. It was the last day in the hospital, and we had to take care of him. And the fear took over. And it was terrible. But I hid it. But this time it was so bad that I really could not control it without people picking up on it. People were starting to say, are you okay? You just don't seem yourself. You're not speaking. And, you know, when they would say that, I would instantly, in my head, say, no, you're not okay. You're crazy. You're insane. You're just like your grandfather. But outside, I'd say, no, I'm fine. Why? So that got to the point where I was introduced to Tylenol PM. I took, you know, 2 of those, and I was zonked. And I said, wow, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to take these and sleep through this until it's gone. So I took those every day for about a week, and I didn't wake up much. I was awake a few hours a day, and I lost a ton of weight in that week and just was not a healthy person. But eventually I did bury these thoughts, and they were gone. And they were gone for a while. And this is where things like fate or faith or things happen for a reason came into play. My son was born and he was sleeping, and my wife and I watched a movie, and I was always very scared. No horror movies, no way, never. But we watched a movie, The Green Mile. And in the movie The Green Mile, there was a scene, and I haven't seen it since, my son's 21 now, since he was a newborn. There was a scene where a girl was raped, and I had to get up and walk away from the TV and go in the bedroom and tell her I wasn't feeling well, because panic had set in, and these thoughts, intrusive thoughts, set in worse than I've ever, ever experienced in my life. It made going back to what I was dealing with as a kid like gravy, because these were intrusive thoughts of me hurting my son. Anything I would do, it would be my son that I would see, and I was really scared. I thought for sure I was fucking crazy. I was 100% crazy. So that went on for a while. And then we bought our first home. And it had been a month, and I'm still dealing with this anxiety. And we closed on the house, and I was there one night by myself painting the walls, and the anxiety was so bad I couldn't take it. So I went home. It was late. Everybody was sleeping. And in the house we were renting, owned by my parents in a few towns over, I just started bawling. I mean, I'm talking crying. If my wife was awake, she just would have seen me sobbing in ways that she never knew I could. And I was never really religious, and I just prayed to God. On my hands and knees like a little boy, hands crossed, prayed to God to help me either end this or end me. I had no desire to live. I was afraid of raising my son, and I said, I need help. So I collected myself. I stopped crying, and I couldn't stop fearing, so I wasn't going to sleep. So I turned on the TV, and an infomercial was on, and it was a woman called Lewin. I can't even think of her name right now. It's been so long. Lorinda Bassett, maybe? I'll have to look that up and get back to you on that. But it was a woman who developed a way to overcome anxiety and panic attacks. And I was like, what? You gotta be kidding me. And it was a 4-CD collection about fears and how to overcome them. So I listened to this entire infomercial, and it gave examples. And it interviewed a girl that said, oh my God, when my son was born, I used to have, you know, I had to have my husband give him baths, because every time I gave him a bath, I would have these, you know, pictures in my head of me drowning him. And I thought I was crazy, so I wouldn't go anywhere near him when it came to bath time. And I just, to hear that, I was like, are you kidding me? Wow, there's other crazy people like me? So I ordered this box set, and I listened to the entire thing 1,000 times over, and I thought I had it figured out. I was fixed, and I went on for, you know, a little while, like probably the longest I've gone on, maybe 6 months, 8 months, with nothing. And then, bam, it came back again. But again, it was worse than ever. It was so bad that I finally said, I can't do this anymore. I have to get help. So I sat my wife down, scared to death, thought for sure she was going to call the police, and told her how I've been living, what I was feeling, and what I was thinking. And she said, well, don't you think you should see somebody? And I took that as a fear, so that scared me. So I immediately jumped in my car, and I went over, because I still, as an adult, depended on my mother for advice. So I went over and I told her, and I said what was going on and how I felt and the things that happened as a kid. And she cried, and I cried, and she said, I had no idea these things happened. And she called. We live in a town that's got a pretty, you know, very, very good college in it, and has a very good psychologist. She called the psychologist at the school to see if there's any way my son could see him. And he said that he couldn't. He was overwhelmed with students, but he just got out of a partnership. And he had a woman that he suggested I see, and he set me up with her. And I went to see her. So I sat down in the chair, and I said, hello. And she said, hello. And she said, what can I do for you? And she didn't have a notebook. She didn't have a pen. And I said, well, are you going to have to write this stuff down? And she said, no. I've been doing this for a lot of years, and I'll remember what I need to remember, and I'll write it down when you leave. And I said, okay. And she said, what brings you here? And I didn't even know how to speak. I was so scared, because I thought for sure that was the end of my life. I thought I was going to be taken from there in a white padded vehicle to the city's psychiatric ward, and I was going to be put in a room with four white walls and a steel door with one, 8x8-inch square window, and I was going to be in a white suit. That's literally all I could think about. And so I told her, I started, and this is exactly how it went. It said, well, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I constantly live in fear. Anytime I see something bad, anytime I hear of someone hurt, or I see someone hurt, or if there's even a siren goes off for the fire department, or we go by an accident, or I hear something on the news, I have these terrible feelings, and I feel sick, and I start getting these crazy thoughts, and it's about, like, me. I'm the one that's, like, the bad person. I'm the one that did this on the news, and it just overtakes my life, and it goes on for weeks, and I can't sleep, and I go, and I don't even know if this has anything to do with it, but I was, as a kid, I was raised by a grandfather who, on every vacation and every weekend, I had a grandfather who, he sexually molested my sister in front of me, and he used to, beat us, and he once took me to work, he'd always take me to work with him, and one time I remember him heating up a pipe. It was cherry red, because he did plumbing and electric, and I asked him, why isn't the pipe red anymore? Because the red disappeared. He said, well, it was red because it was hot. Now it's not. So here, grab it. So I grabbed it, and it just burned my hands. And I remember him laughing at me. And, he used to always make me, anything I put on my plate, I would have to finish it. Even if it made me puke, I had to finish it. If I didn't hold my fork right, I had to sit next to him. If I didn't hold my fork right, as soon as I put my hand down, he'd stab the top of my hand with his fork. And, he wasn't nice, and he used to beat my mother, and I don't know. I know that something's wrong with me, and I shouldn't have these things. And she said, wow. She said, Mark, you are not crazy. I said, I have to be. There's no way I can't be. I'm thinking of these things. And she said, you're not crazy, Mark. I said, are you sure?
Okay, so I just had some technical difficulties. As I said, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm in a remote location, and my battery died on my little controller here. So I hope I can piece this together. Where I was just ending is I thought I was crazy, and she said, Mark, you're not crazy. I said, are you sure? And this went back and forth, and she said, listen, have you ever heard of PTSD? And I said, no. What is it? Am I, does that mean I'm nuts? And she said, no, let's get this straight right now. I've been doing this for many, many years. And I can recognize a schizophrenic or a sociopath within the first few words or few seconds that they walk in my office. And I do not see that type of person. I will get them help, but it won't be through me. It would be through a different doctor. So, I immediately felt better, but I still didn't know what the hell she meant by PTSD. And she said, well, PTSD is post-traumatic stress disorder. Do you realize what you went through in your childhood on a scale of 1 to 100%? You're in the 90th percentile of, basically the worst shit you can see as a kid. So, I'm going to end this because I don't want to make it too long, but I just gave you a pretty broad, narrow non-organized description of kind of my life, but I want to make each podcast kind of, you know, how I thought things, what was happening. You know, I went through periods of my life where I was a bully, and then I went through periods of my life where I found alcohol, and then I found drugs, and then I found a way to beat alcohol and the drugs and the bullying, and I found a way through hard work, through lots of reading, and through, you know, miracles and the hand of God that worked and made me not have these feelings, thoughts, and panic attacks anymore. And this truly works if you just stick along, deal with my unorganized crap, and just listen to me, you know, a normal, average, everyday Joe who just wants to tell you his story and hopes to help reach out to those people that feel like there's really no end, because there really, really is. I promise you, you don't have to feel like this. You don't have to rely on opiates or any other drug of choice, alcohol, because you can feel way better living a healthy life without substance abuse and without living in fear. So until next time, I hope everybody just realizes that there is hope. Come back when I do another one of these, hopefully next week. I am going away next week for a week, so I don't think I will be back for at least a week and a half. But just stick with me. I'll figure this out a little bit more, this podcasting thing. Figure out how you can leave some feedback or how you can ask questions. And together we can just talk and get better and feel better and make a smidgen of a dent on this world or country that is so divided and so scary. I feel bad for people that have anxiety and panic attacks right now, because this is a scary, scary country we live in. And it doesn't have to be. And you don't have to let those things affect your thoughts or your thinking. You can live in peace, happiness. And when you do, you will experience life in a whole new way. You know, it's like the heavens have opened. Light will be brighter. Smells will smell better. You'll see things that you just didn't see before. And it's a good, fun journey that takes some hard work. You have to want to get better and know that you can feel better. So until next time, thank you for listening. I'm sorry it was so unorganized. But like I said, I just want to keep this uncut and just from my point of view, someone that has been through it but found the other side, and give anybody that doesn't have hope, hope and help for your future. And thanks again for listening. And I'll talk to you, let's see, a week from, in 2 weeks. 2 weeks, it'll be 2 weeks before I do another one. And then I'm going to try to do it every week. So until then, take care of yourself. Keep the faith and just live in the now. Just think of living in the now. Don't worry about your future. And don't live on things that happened in the past. Live for what is happening right now, because there's nothing you can change that happened before, and there's nothing you can change that you don't know what's going to happen. So just be happy that you're here. Be happy that you're living right now. And anything that you want to do, you are completely capable of doing. So long.